This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 65. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or are just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes Rob's made. What are you doing this week, Rob?
Well, got a lot of things going on. I was pleasantly surprised. We got a mention by, I'm going to butcher his name, but it's Piotr Solush, and he named us the best podcast of 2011.
I saw that.
Our consistency, honesty, and value. It's pretty cool. He just did like a Tech Awards 2011 thing. So thanks, Peter, or Piotr, and we'll include a link in the show notes to that.
And you can include an apology, a written apology for butchering his name, I'm sure.
Seriously. Yeah, sorry about that. How about you? You were mentioning you had spent some time looking for a developer.
Yes, I actually sat down and wrote out a job description and put it out on Odesk to hire a developer to work on my forum software a little bit, because there's some things that need to be finished off and I just don't feel motivated to actually do them. And they're pretty well defined, or at least in my head, they're more well defined than they are on paper. So I wrote up a job description and put that out there. And within, I'd say probably 9 or 10 hours, I had over 70 applications, and within 24 hours, I had more than 100. I'm still trying to whittle them down. It's kind of hard after you knock off about 60 or 80 people, and then you're down to these last 15 or 20, and you're like, okay, well, who do I just kind of axe from this list? And
yeah,
it gets really hard at that point.
One thing I've started doing when it's, because that's a ASP.NET or .NET development, there are so many folks that do it that I make the listing pretty restrictive. So I would say like 4.5 stars and above only. I would say
they've
billed an hour in the last 6 months.
I would
say English is 5. So you've already done all that. So
I've already done that.
Okay. So the next thing I would do is I would order them by price. If they really are all things being equal, I would order them by price, and I'd take probably the cheapest 5, I'd send all of them the same message where you ask a few questions about, hey, do you work, do you have a full-time job and this is a side gig? Do you work from an office? Do you work from home? I mean, just kind of some basic questions just to see how well they communicate, because you're going to do a lot of written communication. And I would see how those 5 come back. Mm-hmm. That's typically what I've been doing. And because you're right, it's impossible when you have 15 to possibly interview all of them. So at least that'll narrow you. And if all 5 of those come back and they're kind of crappy, you can ditch them and you can move to the next 5. It's nice to have a bigger pool at this point.
Yeah, that's a good idea. What I'd started doing was going through and trying to identify the people who had specifically called out a couple of things that I mentioned, as opposed to just putting in this whole list of these are the things that I've done. So one of the things that's big for me is ability to use Entity Framework. Some of them have done it, but there's a lot of them that haven't, and they've got all this .NET and C# experience, but they don't specifically call out Entity Framework or link to Entity anywhere.
Either just ixnay people who don't have that, or include that as one of the questions. How many months of experience do you have working, in production code with Entity Framework? Mm-hmm. And that's a great one to include to those 5. And most people will answer honestly. And then if they don't have it, you can just refuse them right there. So
yep,
that is a good thing. If you figure out kind of your core thing that you need, it does help with limiting the number of prospects you have.
Yeah, the one thing I don't like is that, especially with Odesk, it's more the interface than anything else. For example, some things that don't quite work well is if you're trying to sort by, and this is odd, if you're trying to sort by the amount that the person's charging, it doesn't actually work all the time. And I don't know why. It seems like it should.
I think because there are two different amounts. There's an amount in their profile that they have, and then there's the amount they bid on your project.
Right.
And the one may be displaying and one may be sorting or something.
That's what I think is happening. Yeah. I think it's going by the one that's showing is the one that they have in their profile versus the one that they're bidding as.
Right. Well, hey, I went on TechZing this week. I guess it's episode 165 and it'll come out, it'll come out in the next few days. Basically, it was 90-minute discussion of like the Hittail acquisition. It was like the most in-depth info I've given about it, if folks are interested. It was kind of cool because it's tough with our podcast because we do make it shorter, 30 to 40 minutes. So we would probably, even if we dedicated an episode to it, probably wouldn't have gone into as much detail as we did there. So if folks are interested, check out TechZingLive.com, or you can check out TechZing in iTunes. In addition, I wanted to do just kind of an open call on Twitter. I'm going to do it here, but go ahead and tweet Mike and I or leave it in the comments if you want to hear more about either the Hittail acquisition or, you know, I guess we've already done Artichark, but certainly if you wanted to hear more about that, let us know. And on Twitter, I'm at Rob Walling and Mike is at Single Founder.
Oh, by the way, did I tell you that I bottled my first batch of beer on Sunday?
You didn't.
So it's been about 2 weeks. It was about 2 or 3 days ago when I just decided to actually start bottling it. It actually took surprisingly little time. It took me about probably 40 minutes or so, and that included cleaning out all the bottles and making sure everything was prepared and then just bottling it all up. And now it's sitting over here next to my desk, and I have to wait another couple of weeks for it to condition. And basically that conditioning process is, I'm not sure quite how to describe it, but basically what I did was I put a couple of teaspoons of sugar into the concoction, and then you just close the bottles up and you wait for it to mix up and chemically do its thing. And at that point, it'll be carbonated, because right now it tastes like flat beer and it smells fine. It's just that there's no carbonation in it. So this process will take care of carbonating the beer, and you'll know when it's done when you can try and squeeze the bottle and it doesn't actually squeeze. It's, you know, very hard to squeeze into it just because it's got the pressure coming from the inside. And then after that, I just throw it in the fridge and can quote unquote condition it for a while, but I don't have to. I can just throw it in the fridge for a few days and start drinking it.
Suck a sixer down every night after that. Hey, you're going to bring it to MicroConf? Is this like the MicroConf draft?
There's certainly not enough beer for me to do that. And I don't know. I don't know how I would even get it to MicroConf.
Well, that's cool. I'm excited to hear if this turns out. And if it does, maybe I'll give it a shot as well. I've always been fascinated with the whole brewing of beer and making of wine, but I've never tried it myself. So.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do it, and it was just one of those things where my wife got me a beer kit for the for Christmas, and I just decided, hey, I want to do it as a little bit of a hobby. Why not?
I've gotten this question a couple times now, once on Texting and then twice from either via email or on Twitter. And someone asked me why I bought Hittail. And it was kind of an interesting question that I mean, I have a definite answer in my head. We haven't talked about it on the podcast at all. So I just wanted to take like 30 seconds and kind of go through the kind of the main reasons for folks who are interested. So the first thing is I had personal reasons for it. This question could be viewed as two things, right? Why did you stop working 2 days a week and go and spend a big chunk of change and buy this thing and revamp it and, you know, work hard for the last 4 months to do this? Why did you leave that semi-retired state or whatever? And for me, so that's the personal side of it, right? It was for learning and personal challenge. I mean, I was starting to kind of atrophy in terms of how much new stuff I was learning. And I felt like I was ready for the next challenge. But I think the more applicable and kind of the, maybe the thing that more people be interested in are the professional reasons of why did you buy it instead of either building it or building a different idea? And the reason I did is because given my situation where my time is so limited and with how many responsibilities I have, I wanted to avoid that 9 to 18 months of building, launching, marketing, all that wait. I'm too impatient. And one way to get around that impatience is to just go out and acquire something. And if you can find something quality, it can save you tremendous, tremendous amount of time. I mean, I'm not joking when I'm saying I literally think that if I tried to build Hittail from scratch and get it to the point where it is in terms of paying customers and number of links and number of monthly visitors and all that stuff, it would easily take me 18 months of time. Even if I was doing it mostly full-time and outsourcing a lot of it, the marketing side would just take so, so long. This domain is aged and it just has all this built-in traffic and stuff. So as we know, building the app takes time and it's either a lot of time or it's expensive. And building a market takes a lot of time or it's expensive. So, you know, maybe that's something we go into a little more detail in a future episode, but I did want to throw it out here. You're traveling next week?
Yeah, I'll be in Pasadena for the next couple of weeks.
Make sure you go out to Santa Monica because you're going to be there on the weekend, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm just coming out. I'm flying in on Sunday and then I'm not leaving until Friday the 3rd, I think it is.
It's only 3 hours from me, so we'll try to connect. And then we should connect with Jason Roberts from Texting. He's in Pasadena.
Oh, cool.
So, and I bet you'll be staying. I mean, it's not that big, so I would guess you'll be walking distance because he lives downtown as well. The last thing before we get into our topic for today, which is six things we learned in the last year, I wanted to mention Forced. in addition to Dribbble. Because the last episode, I mentioned Dribbble, which is Dribble.com, right? And it was for, it's kind of like a social network for designers where they share design ideas. And Zach Tong from the Academy, from the Micropreneur Academy, he emailed and he said, Dribbble is about posting teasers of your work in progress, and it's mainly for designers. But Forrest, which is F-O-R-R-S-T, is about posting work in progress or announcements so you can get feedback. And it's also for developers and designers. So that's cool. He said he has an invite if either you or I would like to join. And I assume they're in beta right now and we'll be launching soon. So if you're listening, check out forrst.com. Our title this week is Six Things We Learned in the Last Year. Mike and I each have three of them.
I think the biggest thing that I learned was how to put together a conference, because there's just so much more that goes into it that you really don't think about. And I dealt with a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, and you dealt with a lot of the front end marketing and making sure that the website was all geared up. But I worked almost entirely with all the sponsors and getting all that stuff taken care of and straightened out. And it was pretty challenging. I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of time to pull everything together, and we got those USB keys that were doubled as pens and laser pointers and everything. And it was just a challenge to kind of bring all that stuff together at the same time.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you also handled all the giveaways and, let's see, the sponsorship, the badges. There was a lot of stuff that was going on behind the scenes that folks didn't see. So
I don't think I ever shared with anybody how much of a nightmare putting together those badges was, because there were still people who were signing up within the last couple of days before the conference was to go on. I couldn't just hand the list off to somebody and say, hey, go do this and I'll get it back from you in 3 weeks. It's not like it's a marketing launch where you can kind of time it after you've got all your stuff done. I mean, we had that deadline and we were still selling tickets right up until that deadline. So it was just kind of a challenge because, you know, one of the sponsors had paid to have their logo put on the name badges. So I had to have them there for everybody.
Right. Yours actually ties into my first one, which is things that are worthwhile are hard. You'd think that I would have known that by now, but I totally learned that over last year. And MicroConf was a big part of that. Afterwards, I was so glad we did it. Like, I was really pleased with the outcome and that we had basically surmounted this enormous challenge. But it was really hard while we were doing it. It was just so much work and mental energy. I think it relates to my acquisition of Hittail and what the last 4 months have been for me as well, the tail end of 2011, is there's like this sense of accomplishment and happiness. I'm like happy with myself, like proud of myself that I was able to pull it off. But at the same time, I had to make, you know, quite a bit of a few sacrifices that I didn't have to make. Like, we didn't have to do either of those things. You and I would have made a perfectly good living last year and we didn't need to do them. And so making the decision to actually make those sacrifices is it's a big one.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with what you're saying, though. I mean, things that are worthwhile are hard, and it kind of puts things in perspective for me, having put in so much time and effort on Audit Shark and thinking to myself, is this actually going to be worth it down the road? I'm sure that it will. It's just, when is that going to happen? How much further down the road do I have to go in order to get there? And when can I kind of set my hat down and take a rest before things will start to get to where I want them to be?
Right.
Well, one of the things that I learned was that I should be outsourcing a lot more things that I currently do. So there's just a lot of things that I do that I probably don't necessarily have to. And it's more because I have some probably latent issues just kind of giving up control of those things. And some of it's just a time crunch where I haven't made the time to either make videos or tutorials or anything like that to be able to hand it over to somebody else and just say, here, you handle this because I don't have the time.
You know, I think that's a really common mental hurdle, and I think it's something that probably every 2 months I face again. Like, I can convince myself, all right, outsource a bunch of this stuff, and I'll go out and hire some folks, and then, like, within 60 days or 3 months, I'll realize I'm doing now a bunch of new stuff that I don't want to do. And so I think we almost need constant reminders to look at our to-do list and say, what of this can be outsourced? I think with how many people experience these exact same feelings, it's not only a common thing, but it's just something that's pretty hard to get through. And I think if folks out there are feeling that, I mean, I think the thing to start with is to head over to probably to Odesk or Elance and pick one or two tasks on your list. Like even if it's a small task of like doing some market research, I have a VA and I had him put together my list of 100 dream clients for Hittail. And these are based on some very specific benefits that Hittail provides and customers who are happiest with it based on conversations I've had, and they have certain characteristics. And so I explained these to him and I put together a quick screencast and, you know, a bulleted list of some things. And then I said, go. And I think it took him 3 hours, 4 hours, and he put together a spreadsheet with all the info we need to basically start courting these customers. And so even if it's something like that, 3 hours at $10 an hour is $30. Anyone can afford to do that. You know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're going to start a business, I think your first step is to kind of dip your toe in the water and figure out it's going to be uncomfortable and how to get over that discomfort.
Yeah, one of the things that I've been looking at doing is putting together just kind of a brief outline to have a VA go out and do some web searches for banks that are near me, so that I had kind of have a targeted list of places to go and maybe phone numbers to call or people to talk to, so that I don't have to go out and gather that information myself.
Yeah, I agree. Something I've never done that I was toying around with last night is, you know, I've talked several times about my marketing plan that I put together. And as I started looking through it, I realized, wow, I like that I put together all this strategy and this list of tactics, but it's going to take a ton of time to implement. And I started thinking about outsourcing, basically finding someone who knows marketing, who's above the level of a VA, and they're going to be more expensive. But to basically sit down with them, probably over Skype, and show them the list, ask if they have opinions on it, you know, in terms of improving it, and then having them implement chunks of it at a time and use their marketing background. So I would essentially be, I wouldn't be outsourcing my marketing, but I would be outsourcing some implementations of some of the tactics, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. Essentially, what you do is you'd find somebody who is familiar with doing online marketing and then have them take a look at your marketing plan and then have them pick off things that they believe that they can handle and yep. can basically just take those things that you've outlined and just go actually implement them.
Right. That's mm-hmm. right. Because I mean, I have a feeling like I have a handle on how I want to market this. I mean, obviously the amount of time this stuff takes is pretty extensive. So given
right.
my other responsibilities, even if spending the last day and a half doing microcomp stuff, it's like I would, you know, I really would like for some of this marketing stuff to be done at the same time. And it's certainly not so complex. These little individual tactics are not so complex that I'm the only person in the world that could do them. I mean, it was almost like thinking them up, discovering them, putting the strategy together. That was the entrepreneur's job. And now I am going to get into implementation. And so I think stretching myself in this is finding someone to implement these things, which I typically don't like to outsource, you know, much of my marketing. But I think I'm going to dip my toe in that water and see how it goes.
I'm seriously considering outsourcing somebody to read my email.
I have as well, actually. I've talked to my wife several times and I've been telling her, I've been trying to go through my email with that in mind. Like, how much of this could I get away with not doing? Is there anything here that could be replied to or filed or whatever without me being involved? And I haven't been able to, after getting, you know, the Micropreneur Academy stuff is now in the good hands of a capable VA, and now the Hittail support stuff is in the hands of a VA as of last Friday. And those are going really well. But beyond that, like everything else is pretty personal. It at least needs my intervention. So
email is just so hard, I think, because you get so many different types of emails mm-hmm. and it's very difficult to classify it because some of it just takes your knowledge or might be better left to an answer from you versus an answer from a VA.
Right. My second thing I learned last year is that it's easy to be great and it's hard to be consistent. And I actually get that from a Steve Martin book. It's his memoir called Born Standing Up. And he uses that phrase, it's easy to be great, it's hard to be consistent. And what he meant by that is that as a comedian, he would see guys just knock it out of the park, but they couldn't do it consistently. That it's actually not that hard to have a great show and have everyone love you, but to do that every night takes years and years and years of work. And I'm realizing that consistency, whether in like with this podcast, the fact that we've stuck around and that we haven't shut it down is a huge deal. And our following continues to grow and continues to be engaged with us, a large part due to the fact that we've now been around for going on 2 years, right? A lot of people don't keep their stuff going long enough and they shut it down. I feel the same way about like my blog. My blog's been around for 6 years now, maybe. I actually think now is a way easier time to start a blog than 2006, because I have friends who have started blogs, and with a few correctly placed posts on Hacker News, they get 500 subscribers in a few months, even in a few weeks, frankly. When I started, it took me 6 months to get to 66 RSS subscribers. It took me a year to get to 250. It was just painful. So few people, you know, there weren't as many social networks. There was no Twitter. There were all these things that just, you either got to the front page of Digger, you didn't. And that was how I did it back then. Now I feel like it's better. If someone were to actually blog and be consistent and write good stuff, I really believe that they could build up a blog way faster than most of us who started 5 or 10 years ago.
I think that what you said there was really key, because you have to dedicate the time to it and be consistent. So, for example, my blog, I've been blogging for 5 years or so, 5 or 6 years at this point, and I don't have nearly as many subscribers as you do. But at the same time, I also almost completely stopped blogging for like probably 18 months, 2 years, something like that. So there's this huge gap in there. And last year I started getting back into it again, but I still was just not very consistent. I mean, I still only blogged maybe a quarter as much as I'd intended. I think that the consistency piece of it is probably what's most overlooked by people. They just don't put the effort into it and they don't dedicate the time to it. And, you know, they're trying and trying and trying and they stop at some point along the way. Whereas if they were to continue going, things would probably be much, much better. I mean, I know for a fact that if I blogged more regularly, I would probably have far more subscribers than I actually do.
Right. There's this careful balance between kind of being stubborn and pigheaded and continuing to bang your head against a wall when things aren't working, and being consistent and banging through that wall and getting to, you know, thousands of subscribers or thousands of listeners or whatever it is. You know, Seth Godin's famously known for that book, The Dip. And the biggest question after people read it is, how do you know when you're in the dip or when you should just give up? And it's a really hard question to answer. And so I think we've talked about this in the past, but it's like, if you tend to give up on things pretty quickly, then I would say you need to charge through and you need to dedicate like a year or two to something before you give up. And I think if you tend to be pigheaded and just do things over and over and not stop them, then maybe you need to start leaning towards the side of giving up sooner rather than later. But in general, I find that the amount of effort to get something done, whether it is a conference or to build an app or to build a podcast or to build a blog with an audience, the amount of effort is way, way more every time, way more than I think it's going to be, that I always underestimate it. And I think most people do in general. And I think that's why it's easy to be great. It's hard to be consistent. It's easy to get that one post on Hacker News that, hey, I pinned it, but it's like, but can you do that every week? Or can you do something every week and, you know, keep that momentum going? And I think that's where 99.5% of people just drop the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of, a little bit of what you said kind of leads into mine, which is apparently number 5. I learned that July was an awful, awful target for getting Audit Shark out the door. And part of the reason for that is just underestimating how much time and effort it takes to do certain things. And with Audit Shark, I honestly failed miserably. And part of it was taking a look at this stuff and saying, oh, well, that should be easy to do, and not really taking into account the time and effort that it takes to do prototypes and figure out how to actually implement something with a technology you've never actually worked with before. I mean, I've never done anything in Azure before. I've never worked with WCF services before. I've never built an architecture for any of that stuff before. So I don't exactly know all of the pitfalls that I'm going to run into. And I certainly ran into my fair share of them. But in addition to that, just having the time that, you know, I need to set aside to do those things and doing a good estimation of how much time it's going to take to do that stuff, I was just way off. I mean, orders of magnitude in some cases.
That's painful, man. It's so hard to take on new technologies or unknowns, right? It's like you can put together a spreadsheet and you can run an estimate for kind of every element of a project. And I almost think you got to like put a huge red background on the ones that are new technologies. It's like if you and I were going to sit down and map out, hey, we're going to build an app, we could put the prep time, the customer development time, all the little tasks, design the database, business tier, data tier, you know, boom, 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 boom. And we can, I mean, you and I could probably crank out an estimate that's within like 10% if we're using just straight technology that we know, whether it's, you know, PHP or .NET or whatever. But as soon as you introduce, well, we're going to use the Entity Framework or we're going to use some new templating engine, you almost have to add this 2x factor, like a 200, 300% increase to that single line item. You don't really want to do that on the estimate because it seems ridiculous, but that's typically what happens because you wind up running into some stupid bug that you just can't fix, that you don't know, that once you've found it, you're going to know that templating engine so much better, but it throws you off for days and days. And I feel like until you've done something once, you know, that hours column should almost just be a huge question mark.
I distinctly remember some issues I ran into with PowerShell, and then there were some things with the Azure tables, and it just, little things just creep up on you, and it shouldn't take as long as it does, but, you know, you run into something that's either an edge case or some weird bug that you don't know that it's a bug, but apparently everyone else who's been working with it for more than, you know, 20 minutes does, and it's obvious to them. It was just hard, but it was definitely something I got to keep my mind focused on, that those sorts of things where there are unknowns, you have to add in a lot more time that you don't want to, but you're going to have to in order to get a more accurate estimate.
Yeah, I think that honestly, that limiting the number of new technologies that you try to mess with in any given project is a great way to basically reduce uncertainty. Because you bit off quite a bit with this one. I mean, you did, honestly. Like when you said Azure, you know, I just listened back to our episodes and I kind of had a reaction to that on the podcast. And I was kind of like, whoa, I've heard that it's hard to get this going, or I've heard that it's hard, you know, complex and blah, blah, blah. All that aside, it's just that it's new. Anytime it's new, it's going to be complex and there's going to be that learning curve. And I think if you had just done Azure and everything else was standard, you'd have been fine. But it's like you said, you also did first time Entity Framework. You also, you know, did probably first time PowerShell because that's fairly new. So it's like you added in a lot of new things and those kind of cascade and multiply.
If I had to start numbering, I can think of five or six things off the top of my head that were brand new that I'd never worked before that kind of all got included.
Right. And those, and if instead of doing that, you had done just a straight up ASP.NET app on SQL Server.
Like, oh, yeah. Easy.
I mean, hundreds of hours shorter, I bet.
Right, right.
You wanted to use the new technologies both to learn them and to be more efficient and to have better performance and all that stuff that those add.
Yep.
Our last one here, this is the sixth thing. It's that we are in the people business. What I mean by that is relationships have never been more important than they are today. I used to work for a guy who bought an electrical contracting firm in the 50s, and he bought it for like $50,000. And by the time he retired, it was doing $600 million a year in sales. And this was in the 90s. And he would always say, he would ask people, what business are we in? And they would say, oh, we're in the electrical contracting business, or we're in the construction business. And he would say, no, we're in the people business. And it was this funny thing. It's this old guy asking you, and it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of cheesy. But the guy lived it out. He was basically like, our customers are people. Our employees are people. Without them, we can't make this work. And I think I'm reflecting on 2011, and I'm realizing that without this podcast and the listeners, you and I probably would not have gotten as much done as we did, because we are like accountable to this group of people. And I bet pulling off MicroConf would have been really, really hard. I bet selling the tickets, getting the word out, all that stuff. This podcast really helped that. And so beyond that, it's like meeting new folks, the TechZing guys, Dan and Ian from Tropical MBA and Lifestyle Business Podcast, like meeting colleagues who are also doing the same thing as us has been a fantastic experience. And it's great to be able to go on their podcasts and increase our audience and do the same for them. And so I'm just realizing kind of a 360 degree thing. It's like the people who listen to us, the people who come to the conference, the people who are doing the same thing we are. These people are way more important than SEO traffic or doing some new tactic on my website. It's like making that one new relationship is way more valuable than looking at more analytics.
I could say without a doubt that I don't think that without the podcast and without the relationships that we have developed, there's no way that MicroConf would have ever happened. I just don't think that it would have gotten the publicity that it needed. I think we would have lost money and would have had to shut it down the very first year that we even tried.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the takeaway from this, what I'm trying to tell people is I used to think I could do everything alone. And I mean, you and I, we're single founders, right? This is what we do. We don't want to hire employees. We don't want to build a big team. But at the same time, I think you need people. Like, you need accountability, whether that's starting a podcast and building an audience that keeps you accountable, or whether that's having a mastermind group, which I'm now in two. I would consider a third. Like, it's that valuable to me. I always thought I could be this lone ranger, and I was a lone ranger for a while, and I made it work, but it isn't nearly as productive. You're not as good. You don't reach the same heights. You can't do the same things without it, and you can't do them as quickly. I think getting people involved and letting them in and letting them know what's going on kind of in your internal world is a real boon to getting things done, whether it's in your business or in your personal life.
That's honestly a bit of a popular misconception about the single founder blog that I have and the moniker that I go by on Twitter. It's just that it's not that you can do everything by yourself. It's that you can start things by yourself and move them further along on your own. You don't necessarily need a co-founder. And that's really what it's all about. It's not that you can do it alone. It's about that you don't need a co-founder or somebody to absolutely share everything with. You can get a lot of that advice out of, for example, a mastermind group. And I think I wrote a blog post about this at one point, which was the argument against having a co-founder. You never get into an argument with yourself about whether or not you should do something. It's just you either decide to do it or you decide not to. That's a little bit different than spending a lot of mental energy arguing with somebody else when they have one opinion and you have a different one. And you just can't come to a conclusion. And then everything grinds to a halt because you're so busy fighting over that one thing that you don't start making decisions that move the business forward or move the other things forward that you're doing. I totally agree that you need other input from people, and whether that's your customers or peers or podcast listeners, blog readers, other business owners, you need input from other people in order to make decisions. You can't get all that on your own. I think that most people would love to be able to say, oh, well, I'm going to sell myself all these services and I'm going to be able to pay all of them and I'll make millions for myself. You can't be both the customer and the provider.
Yeah, I have this phrase that I've used in the past, and it's data is my co-founder. And I was going to put it on a t-shirt. Actually, Patrick Foley said I should put it on a t-shirt and start selling it. I do like that phrase a lot. And I've realized that although there is truth in it, you know, that I can use data to convince me to do something, I've realized that there's also value in a mastermind group. Mastermind groups are all my other co-founder is probably what I would put on the back of that shirt if I printed it. To recap, Mike's three things he learned in the last year are...
The biggest things I learned were how to put together a conference, that I should be outsourcing a lot more things than I currently do, and that doing time estimations on things that you aren't necessarily familiar with is just an awful idea, and you should outsource that as well.
And the three things I learned are that things that are worthwhile are hard, that it's easy to be great, it's hard to be consistent, and that we're in the people business, that relationships have never been more important than they are now. Mike, we're at 72 ratings in iTunes.
That is crazy.
We're going up, yeah, like every couple weeks, we'll go up by 10 ratings. So I've said it in the past, but it helps us rank in iTunes for the term startups. We rank on the first page. We rank in the top three for the term startups, which is kind of, you know, a testament to all the folks who are rating us. We really appreciate it. If you have a question or comment, you can always call it into our voicemail number. We'll answer it on air, 888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing that review in iTunes by searching for startups, and you can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS. A full transcript is available at our website, startupsfortherestofus.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.